Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Martha Rhodes. Martha Rhodes is the author of At the Gate, Perfect Disappearance, which won the Green Rose Prize, and Mother Quiet. Her poems have been published in such journals as Agni, Columbia, Fence, New England Review, Pleiades, Plowshares, and Tri-Quarterly, and anthologized in Agni 30 Years, Extraordinary Tide, New Poetry by American Women, Poem in Your Pocket, which is a publication of the Academy of American Poets, and It's Not You, It's Me. She teaches at Sarah Lawrence College and in the MFA program for writers at Warren Wilson College. Martha Rhodes is the director of Four Way Books in New York City, and she has a new book out with Autumn House Press, which is entitled The Beds. Hi, Martha. How are you?
I'm great. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Sure. We're happy to have you in Pittsburgh. And this is a brand new book, which you're going to read from. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes. It just came out in January, actually, from Autumn House. And it's a book that was long in coming. It took me about 6 years to write, 3 years of bad poems and that got thrown out. And then I got my stride and happy to have it at last in my hands.
Okay.
So I thought I would read from it. I consider it a book-length sequence, actually, but I think the poems stand enough on their own so that they can be read, so that I can skip around. And I'll start with a poem called It Fell on Me. It fell on me to write his stone, purchased before I was born, along with my mother's. Easy to write hers, loving mother of me. But for him, what beyond his name and dates? 4 years since the marble company asked me for the words I wished inscribed. It was never my ambition to be the good daughter. Was, though, to be my husband's good wife. And now he's silent, too. And the western reaches of the bed, his side, stay light, and a fault line divides our small plot. What to chisel into our marriage stone? That he just regarded me as that which he wished lived elsewhere? Erasure, dunes rising, and even shorter days in the east. The next poem I'm reading is Thrombosis. A rat carried this week to us between its teeth and dropped it at our feet, and not even our youngest cat sniffed at it, though the rat surely left his scent on each day, morning through night. And the rat will find its way to us here, too, where at the hospital I hold on to your foot, lest you be rolled away without me. We fear the rat will bring more weeks of inability, both of us unable, though today I am able to eat every donut New York City offers. My grandfather was a baker from Vienna. Perhaps he'd say to me today, donuts are in your blood. And what should I say about your blood, dear, not knowing yet what's in your blood that brings us here this week? The concussion. Let me remind you that the bile his injury riled up arrived on your pillow as you slept. He would have forgotten the shower's purpose were you not there, soaping him front and back, your hair not clean yet, braided and complicated to unbraid when wet and foul. The bed hastily stripped, then remade by you while he, propped in a chair and snug in your robe, stared at what? For all of this, he still may not be kind to you again. Concussions known to turn some rabid. Your floppy retriever. Now he's weaving toward coffee in the galley kitchen. Retract your hand. Evolution. The golden and extraordinary frogs ate us bugless, then vanished somehow. So, all over us this spring, mosquitoes returned and triumphant. The low chorus from the pond, just memory, replaced by a buzzing that sears through our ears and bloodies, devours our limbs and faces. Carnage on our decks. We'll stay inside mostly hereafter. What's happened to the frogs? Remember when we had frogs? Do you suppose that this is just another extinction? What are frogs? The children sputter. Our screens chewed through, we flee blanketed and hurtling toward our car. But where go those animate engines at our heels? In the rearview mirror, my God, what are those? I'm looking at his back as he exits the shower. To quietly touch that back, catching a drop as it lets go his hair to course down his neck, down between his shoulders. He'll spin around, his drying off interrupted to say, what? The floor, ceiling, and wall of my heart will then glaze over and explode. I close my eyes to him. I don't want an ice chip to ever travel my finger to my heart. Every day now, tiles pop off the bathroom wall. We could redirect the shower head or just move, one or both, why not, out. I claim Baker River as it opens in a rush. A saddle of rock holds me. The river's New Hampshire cold at first plunge, then habitable, a gentle pound on my back. I'm looking at myself living there.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Martha Rhodes. She's reading from her new collection from Autumn House Books, which is entitled The Beds. Okay, Martha, you said something about this book taking a long time, 6 years, and I don't think that's that long for a book of poems. And then you talked about 3 years of bad poems. Can you talk about the writing of the book a little more? Because that sounds really interesting to me.
I think it felt like a long time because 3 years of writing poems that you just feel aren't ever going to see the light of day does feel like a long time. Then it felt like I was racing for the next 3 years because I was so engaged with the work. So sure, 6 years isn't a long time, but when the work is grueling and difficult and you're not engaged with it, it just feels stretched out. So the last 3 years, in contrast, really did race through because I was just in a sort of fever of writing and really enjoying the work.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wasn't talking about how it feels. I know how it feels in those years, but what about the idea of a book-length sequence? Did those first 3 years, do you think they were necessary to get to the last three, and did the idea of sequence come out of an idea that you sort of placed onto the poems, or was it an organic development?
It was an organic development. I realized as I was writing the poems that there was a strong tether poem to poem. I mean, the sequence isn't arranged in the order of the writing of the poems, but I realized that not just thematically, but tonally and syntactically, there seemed to be a way that the poems were really bouncing off of each other. The first 3 years of poems really were coming out of the World Trade Center stuff because, well, I lived just about four blocks from the Trade Center. My husband's business was two blocks from there. So there was a lot of stuff coming up and of displacement and just a lot of mourning and dishevelment in mm-hmm. every way. And the poems just weren't good, but I needed to get to them. And then these other poems that feel more domestic started to come up that, I didn't set out to write poems of relationship, but that's just what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously our listeners can't see you, but when you started talking about the Trade Center, your breath changed and your face changed, and you know it was very visible.
Uh-huh.
That seems like it's still with you, and I wonder if I felt a lot of sadness in the book, and I wonder if that has any relationship.
It probably does. the rug was just pulled out of all of us and out from under all of us, and just living in that area and having our business affected and our homes affected, it was just a very difficult time, and it definitely is with me.
Yeah. Could you read more poems?
Sure. Thank you. I'm going to read a poem called Where To. Before we have time to despise each other, before it ages and causes aches so that I swear at it, lie across it diagonally, forgo it for the sofa, I discard it, infested, the creatures finding entry and emerging to feed on me as welts spontaneously rise, entire pastures swelling, 14 weeks of sleeplessness and ice chips sliding down my slopes and pills, baked salves, the mud of me a wreck, and every morning I'm afraid of every cushion and wall, hotel, train, afraid to leave home and to return, and unwanted everywhere. Finally, out, my beloved bed trucked away, tagged so others will be sure to recoil. But where dumped? Where are things dumped? And where will I end up? And where, of course, the underlying question is he. To the sailor. 50-foot seas, 30-foot boat, 5-foot-7-inch husband whose duffel I unpack, whose orange squall jacket and whistle I now hold. What sea held you so long, or who? Banana boat. I once sat on a stone wall built by my father and looked across our green plush lawn, waiting for my mother to come back to me by boat, sailing forward through the swamp in back of our yard, up onto our lawn, a boat filled with gifts for me, filled with my mother, her arms outstretched. My pretty mother would wade out into the rays of our yard's private sun and run to me, up the stone steps to where I sat squealing to be lifted by her forever, lifted and adored, for she had been gone 2 weeks on a banana boat to Panama, and so the boat I waited for was yellow and filled with bananas, and I looked through the pines that bordered our yard into the swamp of frogs and snakes that froze over in winter, forming a fine skating pond. I looked for the banana boat and would not come inside for lunch, but ate outside a sandwich and punch and stretched out on the ledge and cried myself to sleep, my oldest sister carrying me inside, stroking my whole body out of tantrum, my beloved babysitter twirling my hair into banana curls every day until my mother arrived by car, parked in our circular drive, and opened the front door, and it was a lovely 2 weeks with the babysitter whom I loved almost as much, wasn't it? And wasn't I taller now, and my hair longer, and my skin brown from the sun, and more freckles, and look, a banana necklace I would keep under my pillow and worry with my fingers into tangled knots for decades as I struggled to sleep each night but couldn't and can't now because I wait and wait and wait and wait for his return. Please do not persist when I've told you that I do not go downtown, nor any more out of state, no Cape, no mid-coast Maine at Christmas, my sister's cottage empty of me, not to the pharmacy, no refills, no shampoo bought, everything delivered, the world to me. So last night, when you and I drank up the bar you're calling Puffy's, I confess only this. I was here, in bed, in this house, alone. Let me show you how I held myself precisely at 9:45 until dawn, asleep. So tell me, how there, then? Last night? Leave here? For Puffy's? No, mistaken. not I who kissed you, nor kiss you now, nor ever will be. Foghorn. The sheet's dark on dark pattern, a flat dull sea, calm enough. Something's floated to me, content to warm itself at my side. Familiar, unsure if I'm asleep or not, I nudge it away, not to bruise or break, but to assert. A small groan then, as it resettles somewhere off. I've begun my own noise of warning, a trembling at first, then persistent, even confident, through the night's steady fog.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Martha Rhodes. She's reading from her new collection, The Beds, published by Autumn House Press, and I want to make sure to give a shout out to Mike Sims, who has done so much for poetry through Autumn House. And so thanks to Michael. Martha, I wanted to talk a little bit about the interaction of form and free verse in your book. There's some poems of each, and I'm interested in the interaction of the self-aware voice in the book and the unexpected repetition and movement. And can you talk about your use of form in terms of play versus restraint? You know, thinking of what people like Molly Peacock and many others have said, that talked about form as a container for the difficult, but your form seems to have more play in it. I don't know if I'm getting that right.
I think you're right. It's funny. There's a poem called Next Minute in this poem, which isn't in this book, which has a pretty set rhyme scheme, and it feels like a real sort of small package of intensity to me. That feels like a very fierce poem. But then there's a series of rondelets that I wrote, probably wrote 12 of them in about a day and a half. Yeah, just kind of sat there and wrote these poems. And I had squirreled myself away at a little B&B in Provincetown, Mass, where I like to go to write. And I had the sense that this book needed some tonal modulation, and these felt a little bit aslant from the other poems. They felt, I could feel the link, but they felt like I was able to express some of the stuff that that the speaker of the poem or speakers were going through in the book, but in a different kind of voice that the form allowed for. I didn't set out to do it, but it happened, and I thought, yeah, I think that I can put these in the book. And then I realized they should not be in the book as a clump. They should be sprinkled throughout, I think. I think I did that right. So that's what you're seeing.
Well, you know, speaking of tone, everyone talks about how you, as you said, modulate tone in your poems. And can you talk about compression as a way to establish tone, sort of saying much less rather than more, and how you seem to evoke a lot of emotion with that compression?
I tend to play the accordion when I'm writing poems. In other words, I bring poems way out and then I bring them in.
Not literally.
And then I bring them not literally. And then I bring them out again and then I bring them in again. And yes, I do. I don't know. For me, the short poem, I see novels in short poems. And I just do. And short poems for me are just a way to be leaner and less diluted. Now, there are two poems in the book that for me are long poems. One I read, Banana Boat, and that has a different kind of intensity. I think it builds up toward the end, at the very end. It's a new kind of poem for me, in that it just kind of takes its time on the page. There's more, I guess, more patience on the page.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, compression is a way to really get at a kind of, I hope, textured and layered tone, but delivered fast.
Right. I mean, reading the poems, I was really struck by how much power they had, and I kept saying, "How's she doing that? How's she doing that?" So it's really working.
Thank you.
Could you read some more poems?
Sure. The Gathered. The river sludge hardens and cracks. We pitch our tents in mile-long rows, branches, leaves, fox, and deer tracks. A few puddles pool, but there's little flow. We're camped above, too tired to press one more step. We sleep in fits. The gnats, the howlings, the mess of our lives brighten our eyes and lit before us our precious disasters. This town's been claimed by the ridiculous, by the should-have-known-betters who assign us these lots, who welcome us here as their own. We deserve this rot and roll in it, thrive in it, and in turn welcome those who follow us. Need a bed? Rest here with us, friend. End of the line. Dead end. The Rubble. He lived against and through us as a trickle eroding a thick cloister wall. We weren't strong, though we were many. We saw the corn grow just for him, our orchards ripen as he approached, wither at his departures. Finally, depletion, the great embarrassment of having given so much. The Jade Plant. I want to go to the room where the jade plant thrives on the white pine floor. I want to sit next to the jade plant all day against the white plaster wall. I want the room available all days and evenings. It just one of the several in my house arranged by me for peaceful times. I want to go to the room now, though it does not exist in my life yet. It is several hundred miles away, in a small town cottage by the river. A friend who knows me best might say, "I can see you in this house with its contained yard." I sit in the white room often. The plant is old and thick. Its leaves are shiny deep green. My sister arrives soon from Maine, and I'll give her this room for the week. The jade actually our mother's. What she last bought, the eve she lost all memory of what it is to buy something, to recognize what it is you want, to point to it and say, "That should be mine now," and then it is.
Martha, let me ask you, I know that, you know, you're the editor of Four Way Books and the founder of Four Way Books, which was founded in 1993 in New York City. And it's really become a wonderful press. And can you talk about if there is any relationship between the work you do with writers, getting their work into print, and your own work? And I also know that you're a big you're invested in students, and you do a lot of work with students, directing. I guess you're the new director of the Frost Place, and you're very involved with literary organizations, and I think you do some of the Coleraine conferences. So can you talk about, is there any interaction between all the help that you give to younger writers? And
yeah, I when I started Four Way Books, I was coming off 12 years of working in a graphic studio with my husband in advertising, and it was very intense, and it was a job that I wasn't very good at. And so I decided that I really wanted to have a life of doing stuff that I wanted to do. And I knew that I wanted to write, I knew that I wanted to teach, and I knew that I could be a good publisher in that I'd learned a lot from working in a graphic studio. I'd learned a lot about having a business and being tenacious and being, you know, steadfast and professional. So I thought that I could sort of have a patchwork quilt of a life. And teaching pays off a lot for my work because I'm constantly seeing in other people's stuff issues that I have with my own work. And so I get back to my own work and say, practice what you preach. And it's just also a way to keep challenging and encouraging people to challenge their own work. Keeps me in a place where I'm challenging my own work and not just settling for this draft or this draft, but really bringing it through a lot of revisions and a lot of what I consider radical revisions. And publishing, I would say, feeds into my work not really as much because, you know, you start a publishing company thinking you're going to be this editor, 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 but you're really a fundraiser, 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 grant writer, you know, and the face of a press. I do work hands-on with many of my authors, and that is terrific, but I'm not in the teacher mode with them. What it has helped is helped me learn how to put different kinds of books together. While there's no formula it for putting a book together, it does help me see that there are so many different ways to think about organizing and that they all have very serious implications and can have really, you know, they have whatever you do has an impact on how your reader is going to read your work.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for all the all the work you do with writers, because you've gotten a lot of great books out there. I think we have time for just one more poem.
Okay. Actually, I will read the first poem in the book, which is one of the earliest poems that I wrote for the beds, and it's called The Small Canal Between Them. Into the small canal is nothing ever tossed. This is a dare not venture into place, and so persists, tannic and idle, for the rest of their lives.
It's the poetry of Martha Rhodes, reading from her new book, From Autumn House, The Beds. Thank you so much, Martha. That was great.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time, Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 FM.